Presidential pretzels aside, we haven't faced a major White House health crisis in a good many years. But for devoted viewers of The West Wing, a fictional crisis is bad enough. TV president Jeb Bartlett suffers from MS and probably kept his degenerative condition far too long from the American people. But fans faced a different kind of loss this week when NBC announced that after 7 years, The West Wing will end in May. From the start, The West Wing was unusual network fare, the dialogue a little faster, the characters a little smarter than nearly anything else on the air. James Poniewozik writes about TV for Time magazine. He says that in 1999, when The West Wing first hit the small screen, the conventional wisdom was that politics just doesn't play as a subject for mass market drama.
Politics is polarizing. I mean, I think this all goes back to the vaunted and I think now outdated notion of LOP, least objectionable programming.
Right.
That is, if you're a big TV network, you want to provide viewers with as few reasons as possible to change the channel. Well, if you're doing a show about politicians that has any actual politics in it, at some point, somebody has to say what party they're in, and they have to take a stand on issues that people get mad about in real life. And, you know, the thinking is, well, you're doing a show about, you know, a Democratic administration. You've lost half the audience. I think that that turned out not to be true. Because, in fact, I think that while The West Wing is certainly Democratic wish fulfillment, I think it's also a nonpartisan wish fulfillment in a way, in that a lot of its storylines are really simply about the wish for politicians who take stands on principles.
President, I got to tell you something, and you're not going to like the sound of it.
What?
He's right, and we're wrong.
About what?
About the ethanol tax.
Mr. President, Leo's right.
Sam's weighing in.
Sir, I put McCambridge, Aiello, and Dane in a headlock to vote our way. Let's send them back. We'll lose 53-47, and we'll take the vice president off the hook.
All right, let's do what Sam said.
Well, it was launched during the Clinton administration, and I guess it was supposed to be somewhat based on it. I know there were a lot of TV producers and writers hanging around the Clinton White House, but it wasn't really supposed to be the Clinton White House, right?
It wasn't exactly supposed to be the Clinton White House. And ironically, you know, back then in 1999, part of the wish fulfillment element was that it was an idealized Clinton White House, one in which there was more honesty. I remember in the first season, Aaron Sorkin talking about how he once wanted to do a scene, which I think he never actually did, in which an intern propositioned Martin Sheen in the Oval Office. And, you know, Martin Sheen told her something like, you know, if you ever try to do that again, you'll be fired. In other words, it was in many ways, frankly, a critique of what was then the sitting Democratic administration.
We have a $32 billion budget surplus for the first time in three decades.
Yes.
The Republicans in Congress want to use this money for tax relief, right?
Yes.
Essentially what they're saying is we want to give back the money.
Yes.
Why don't we want to give back the money?
Because we're Democrats.
But it's not the government's money.
Sure it is. It's right there in our bank account.
That's only because we collected more money than we ended up needing.
Isn't it great?
I want my money back.
Sorry.
You know, after you heard that the show was canceled, you wrote that you hoped that it would end with Bartlett and his team cleaning out their desks, ready to hand the baton over to a Republican president. Why do you hope that?
I think it makes dramatic sense. One thing that I think has been a flaw of the show is that purposely it has been a little too easy on its protagonists in the Bartlett White House. So I think it would be a plausible and dramatically rewarding change for the show to, you know, have the characters face being turned out of office in favor of another party and to look back on, well, what have we accomplished over 8 years and what have we done right and what have we done wrong?
Obviously, we cover the Washington Press Corps in real life on this show. And so I've always been interested in how the West Wing portrays the press and the administration's relationship with the press. Is that just me, or do you think that those storylines are compelling for everybody?
One thing that I think is probably interesting to the lay viewer is the fact that the White House press spokesperson can often be strategically kept in the dark and even willingly kept in the dark. There are often these questions of, you know what, don't tell me about that because I can't tell the press corps about this and I don't want to have to lie. So don't let me know too much about this information that I can't disclose. I think it sometimes portrays the Washington press corps as interested in superficiality and, you know, personalities and gotcha stories and things like that. all of which is entirely true.
I was waiting for that.
But it's often a function of the fact that the White House press corps lives this you know sort of hermetic environment in which they have a very difficult time getting actual information out of the administration. So what else are you going to write about?
You know, a lot of White House insiders who have been involved with the show have been quoted over the years regarding the impact of the West Wing. Lawrence O'Donnell, who is one of the show's executive producers and is one of those former Washington insiders, said he knew the show was making a cultural impact when he found that politicians who rarely watch TV were fans.
I think it was taken fairly seriously in the political community for the way it laid out actual real political issues. I mean, as a critic, I thought that the show could often be a little preachy, a little didactic. On the other hand, you know, I have to give it credit. It would do storylines about the census and redistricting, and I think it deserved respect for that.
The census has to be taken seriously.
Tell me about it.
You know, it's not glamorous, but, you know?
Sure.
You need something?
Did you get a haircut?
So do you think you'll miss it?
You know, I will miss it. There are certain shows, and West Wing is one of those for me, that because they're so ambitious, even when I haven't liked them, they provide just a rich level of things to criticize about. You know, it can be more rewarding for me to be mad at the West Wing than it is to enjoy a show that is one-fifth as ambitious.
So as we look ahead, we have Gina Davis, who plays the first woman president and commander-in-chief. Who would you prefer for president, Gina Davis or Martin Sheen?
I got to go with Gina Davis because I'm pretty sure she's taller. And the taller candidate just always seems more authoritative, don't they?
It didn't seem to work for Kerry.
Oh, well, there's always the exception that proves the rule.
Okay, James, thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.
James Poniewozik is the TV critic for Time Magazine.